It's Saturday, September 17th, 2016. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley and Shelley Fryer, narrowcasting from Poblanos in Oklahoma City. Well, hello and welcome to a podcast following a Saturday PBS Scratch Junior workshop. We have just been actually enjoying some nachos and some beverages after a workshop that went from 9 till 2 o'clock. And I recorded some audio actually during the session. This is a workshop that Shelley led and I was just there to assist. And as we've talked about all kinds of things in the days and weeks leading up to this, one of the things we've talked about was the importance of being with other teachers and hearing, seeing lessons taught and vocabulary and things like that. So I think it'll be beneficial to listen to those pieces. And I'm going to put those in following our little debrief. But we brainstormed a few different ideas and lessons learned. And I think Shelley might write a blog post about this as well, maybe. I don't know, because this was great. So, Shelley, why don't you just tell us, how did this come about? And for people who don't know anything about PBS Scratch Junior, well, I mean, the div and stuff. Like, you know, tell a little bit about the background of the app and PBS and your relationship with them, and then how did today end up happening?
Last year I had an opportunity to talk to the PBS national meeting, their annual meeting for the year, and I was highlighting some of the PBS activities that I'd been involved in, and one of those that had been relatively new was the PBS Scratch Junior app. And I was using it with my students because they're already really familiar with PBS characters. And when I found out they had an app, that was awesome because it allowed us to create games and stories based on their favorite PBS characters. And so that was one of the things that I showcased in my talk with at the annual meeting. It was really cool because we got to meet one of the developers who had worked with MIT and Scratch Junior to get permission for PBS to do that app and produce that. So I've been working with the PBS Scratch Junior app for at least a year now.
December of 2015 might be when it came out. So it hasn't really even been out a whole year.
No. So, and my kids have loved it and they really have taken to it. I love the environment because even though it's rated for kids 5 through 7, it can go so way farther than that. It's a simple, interactive app. However, it allows for some very complicated code. So it's really great for students, and it works wonderful. It's an iPad app, and so which is exactly, it's block-based coding. And so anyway, thanks to that and being able to do that, there is a group in Edmond, Oklahoma called the DIV, and they provide workshops for students and for kids on Saturdays. And so I was able to go and teach a workshop for students today, 3rd grade through 5th grade. We had 15 students, a great mix of boys and girls. And I had, you know, kids in 3rd grade, 4th grade, and 5th grade. And it was just a really awesome one day. Well, it was from 9 to 2 opportunity. And we created 3 projects in the morning. And then after lunch, we created a 4th project and had a time at the end of the day to be able to show and share with parents.
So if you'd like to find the resources for the workshop, we'll include those in the podcast show notes. You can also simply Google the 3 words Oklahoma Scratch Camp. And then in the left sidebar, if you're on the iPhone, you have to click a little button to show the sidebar. You'll click on September 2016. So I have been involved in helping co-facilitate Scratch camps here in Oklahoma since 2012, when I think I did the first one with Chris Simon over at Independence Elementary when he was the STEM teacher. And then I ended up being the STEM teacher there and have had a chance to work with the DIV for a number of years. So it's exciting and wonderful to have a business and that iThemes, which is primarily responsible for sponsoring the DIV, but also, you know, other community groups, and this acknowledgement by our community that coding is important, and public schools by themselves are not providing these kinds of opportunities for kids. And so we really need to provide them as enrichment opportunities, whether that's a Saturday workshop, a spring break, or a summer camp, and then to try to empower teachers to learn about tools like Scratch and environments like Scratch, and be able to whether it's after school or during school, provide chances for students to use those skills and you know, have coding-based creativity. So, Shelley, you're going to be interviewed this week. This is exciting, by a national PBS video group that's wanting to, I think, amplify Scratch Junior. What would you tell people about computational thinking and constructionism at this point, as far as how that fits into coding and what we did today?
I think it's really important for students to have a basic understanding of what coding means. That in our digital lives, everything digital involves some amount of code. And I think it's really important that students realize, just have a general basic knowledge of what's going on there. I have found that by teaching coding, it allows students to kind of break down what they want to do in individual steps. It allows them to put together the things that they want to do in a sequential order. It also, by doing a variety of different coding opportunities, it allows students to have a sandbox in which to test ideas and to be in creative and to not only create stories but also to create interactive games, and so that they begin connecting what's happening in their real world into a digital format. And I have found that kids are, especially even students in my school situation, I teach third and fourth grade at Positive Tomorrows, and we are a school for homeless students. And so many of my students have not had experience with iPads or Androids or Kindles. Many of them have had experience with Xboxes and games like that. So I want them to know that, you know, coding is more than just playing a game on their Xbox, but it's also creating something.
And I think we'll go down our list of little lessons learned, but one of my biggest today, and I don't know if I even wrote this on there, was I think you did a great job breaking down the skills and the lesson sequence today and not having students get in the situation where you say, what do you want to create? And they want to create something far more complex than they have the ability and the knowledge to do. And that has happened before. Maybe this was really early on in some of the Scratch camps. I'm thinking of a fifth grader in particular. It's probably all the way back to 2012. But, you know, this was a student who had not done, for instance, a complex conversation where multiple characters were talking back and forth to each other. And he wanted to, you know, make some really advanced game that involved, you know, machine guns and a score and all this kind of stuff. And this is part of computational thinking and just app literacy and coding literacy. Not app literacy, it's coding literacy. It's building blocks, you know. Students need to be introduced to different blocks to be able to see how they fit together and how they can, you know, make something animate or interact. And as they build those foundational skills, it's like building a house. You have to build a foundation before you can put a roof on. You can't make a balcony. You can't, you know, create a, you know, a huge vaulted ceiling, you know, until you have a strong foundation and you have walls and you've, you know, built support structures. So, anyway, I think you did a good job with that.
Well, I think it goes back to scaffolding skills. And I like being able to not only just introduce students, but have a purpose for introducing them to certain blocks or certain skills. So, you know, you introduce those and then you use those in a real way. And I find I provide my students with a lot of opportunities to just play in the sandbox and experience the app.
What is play in the digital sandbox mean?
Playing in the digital sandbox means that it's more of like free play, free time, figure it out yourself, help your neighbor figure it out. It does not involve a direct lesson. So I have several apps that we use as sandboxes where the kids are just kind of figuring things out on their own at their own level and pace. But when I'm actually teaching coding lessons, exposing them to, let's say, the block-based coding in Scratch Junior, I try to pick activities which will scaffold the skills. If I only allow them opportunities to play and to experience that, they don't get into the complexities of the scripts that they could actually write because they find ways to do one thing and they don't explore other avenues.
And they can kind of fall into a hole. One of the things you talked about, I think we did write this on the list, was that it worked well with the lesson sequence just because they, you were asking them during the initial part here, choose these characters, choose this background, basically replicate, and then having open time to explore so that a child didn't, for instance, spend all the time, you know, drawing a dinosaur character and then never, you know, get to the block building part. Anyway, so can you give us an overview of your lesson flow and what you introduce, not only about the Scratch lessons, but also kind of how you set the stage of expectations with Apples Up and Signals and that kind of stuff. So how did you structure the day today?
I think it's really important when you're doing a workshop or a lesson with students to have a common parameters. Like, I know that when I am talking and students have their iPads up, screens up, and they're interacting, they're not ever giving me their full attention. So I have a signal, and we call it Apples Up, and so that just means the face of the iPad is turned down so that I can have more of their attention. So it's just a quick, simple, you know, way to get the students' attention. Also, we started today by, and also just talking about making sure that they knew kind of a schedule. I know that working with students, in my poverty situations, that scheduling is important and predictable schedule. And so letting them know that we were going to create different types of projects that would introduce different skills to them. And then they needed to know when lunch was, because students always want to know when they're going to eat. And then having plenty of time to have work time to create their projects. And so I think it's really important that they kind of have an idea of how the day was going to flow. Also, thanks to your idea, we started off the day by acting out, you know, what we were going to do and using that coding language that I knew we were going to, like, you know, so Wes stood in a corner of the room and we had to code Wes's movement to get to the front of the room on a stool. And so we talked about, you know, our command blocks. We talked about what was going to trigger him to turn one way or another. And we talked about how many steps it was going to take him to move forward or to turn.
And then you tested those.
And we tested those. And rather than having one child give directions, we talked about what we needed our sprite or our character to do. And then all together, we were able to give the commands for that code. And so it was really great. It didn't take very long, but I think it was really important to introduce the language in that way, knowing what lessons and vocabulary that I was going to do. So it gave us a way to introduce vocabulary and to kind of give kids a real world experience for so what we were going to be coding.
Okay. So what was the sequence of lessons that you did that people can find videos for? Because we either made or found videos for each activity we did this.
Right. So the first activity I did was just a basic overview. And so when I'm doing this with students, I like having those already videotaped because it kind of sticks to our schedule. And it allows us to play that video and stop. And so at the same time that introduction video or whatever video is showing, the students are replicating that exactly how it is. Not because I want to put constraints on them, but it's just a time-saving thing. So I'm introducing in specific blocks at different times.
Well, it's kind of like learning the alphabet. Bed and copying down letters. You know, there are times and places for copying, and so the initial cycle there is to copy what's been done, and as we talked about at the end, you can be so much more efficient with a recorded video that actually has been recorded several times to get it to be as quack to get to be a duck, to be as fast and efficient as it is. But then you were pausing, you were talking over the video, you were using the mouse pointer to highlight things. You were really using it as a teaching aid and sometimes rewinding to show parts again.
Right. And I think it's also not only for all of those during that time, but have a reference point for students to go back to later when they're at home so that they can watch those videos again and either teach someone else or to develop those skills further. So I used that. So we did a basic introduction and kind of just introduced them to where all of the buttons were. And then we started on our first project. And our first project was creating an animation of a race. And so we had characters and we were introducing the speed blocks and the forward blocks and the planning grid and how to add characters. And then after that, we kind of did the initial setup. Then the kids had 10 minutes to go in and add in, you know, something new, something different, to change characters, to change backgrounds, to a what if, you know, what if a character fell, you know, what if a character disappeared. So they had fun kind of exploring some of the other blocks during their creative time. So we did the basic create a race animation, and that was neat. And then we had a really great video from a guy from Australia. His name.
We'll include his link in the show notes.
And it was awesome because he created an interactive game and where it involved a rocket ship and everything would shrink. And then what would happen if the rocket ship collided and how to interact with the rocket ship.
He was trying to avoid the planets. The planets were moving and looping, right?
Yes.
It introduced loops.
Definitely introduced loops, introduced drawing a character, creating your own background.
Because the character was actually a boom. Yeah. It was an explosion, you know.
How to go on to a second level.
Oh, gosh. And we had kids that, yeah, just immediately, as I told Shelley we would have, as it always happens, you know, that exceeded our expectations because they put a back button on so you could repeat.
A pause button.
They have a pause button.
We had one boy who was trying to figure out a way so that they could get points, mm-hmm. how to record points. So
to do multiple levels.
So you could definitely tell students who had involved in games. And it really is an attraction to have students begin creating their own games,
right.
Which involved interaction. Right. So interacting games, which is awesome about using an iPad, because you can do those touch interactions with that. And it gave us some great vocabulary about negative integers and moving forward.
Right.
And we were able to introduce some really neat
math. You drew the
math
timeline
terms.
At one point, you know, talking to them and saying, how can we not go back a full step? It's a half.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the M in STEM, you know, the math. It's, you know, talking about how long is a step and doing it in, you know, forward and backward, positive, negative, and, you know, just using math in meaningful ways. And this is why Seymour Papert wanted us to use Logo and why Scratch was created, was to provide this very natural environment for students using mathematics as part of their language of expression and creation.
Mm-hmm. So that was really awesome. And then the third project of the morning was
story, right? Conversation.
No, that was the third project. So we did animation, and then we did the race, and then we did the rocket ship. Yes. And so then we broke for lunch. It was so interesting. I've never had kids. I mean, we were serving pizza. And they all like cheese, by the way. But they were racing to eat their pizza because they wanted to get back into their iPads
to
continue creating. And so I've never had students that were so motivated to get back as fast as they could, to continue creating and building. So after lunch, we did what I think is the most difficult, is creating a story.
But you showed Antonio's first.
Yes. I had a student last year for his passion project that was really interested in coding and had experienced a lot of different code. But he spent about 3 days coding a story in PBS Scratch Junior, which you can see on my classroom webpage on our YouTube channel, which is classroom.shelleyfryer.com. We have our YouTube channel is on there. But he spent about 3 days programming a story that had four different levels or four different beginning, middle, and end, and conversation happening between characters. And he does an awesome way of explaining the sending and receiving of messages. So
he does. He explains it so well.
He does.
Which can be a huge part of the value
absolutely.
Of this, right? The verbal fluency and communication, and then students showing, you know, by explaining the learning, because just looking at a project does not give you that same kind of insight into what was learned. And
no, and what I did like about the interactive game was that it involved multiple scripts for characters, and so that was a really important part. That, you know, when we very first start, everybody thinks the script is one long script, but we were able to break down different parts of that script for different times and different what ifs. You know, if this happens, then this happens. If this happens, then that happens. And so, so we introduced and started a story, and then students needed to continue that story, to build on it, in a, you know, beginning, middle, and an ending, and be involved in that.
And then show and share.
And then show and share, which is huge because parents started showing up about 1:30. And so we pulled all of the students down on the floor. That was another thing. This was a really great environment because the tables were movable. I had students alternating between sitting on the floor and going back to their tables to work. And I had students who were working independently and students who were teaming up together and showing and sharing ideas. But at the end, about we were able to hook up our iPads to the Apple TV and to give our projects a name, the projects that we wanted to share, so students could choose the project that they wanted to showcase and give it a title and then showcase that to the parents, and which is really awesome for kids to be able to do, because many students, just like many adults, do not like to get up in front of people and tell about things. But if they can showcase, you know, via digital video, then they love to share, and they of course are so proud of the work that they've put into that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of our ideas that we debriefed. You've already talked a little bit about the setup was great. So different from being in a computer lab with fixed desks and fixed, you know, screens, and just much more social. Reminded me of your classroom with your flexible learning spaces that you have. The formats, talk about that as far as how you started a project together and then gave work time. Why do you think that was effective?
Well, I think, again, what we've talked about, it is really important to have a common vocabulary and that scaffolding. I think it's really important to have the different scaffolding. But it's also important for students to have an opportunity to construct their own projects.
Construction.
Yeah, it's that they need an opportunity to construct their own projects. They need an opportunity to be creative. They need an opportunity to put in their own ideas.
So if you're teaching coding in any form, and Scratch Junior is a great format, you know, Hopscotch is something that's another wonderful app, you know, please do not just insist that kids follow your recipe and make the exact project you did and then that's it. You know, it's great to use that to build the knowledge and skills, but then, you know, turn them loose in ways that allow them to be creative and to do more then just follow a set of instructions. I think that's a trap we sometimes fall into just with lessons in general, as we can tend to say, here, your perfect lesson, and kids get conditioned for that. Well, what do you want this to look like? Well, what does it have to, you know? Well, I want you to use some of these blocks, but I want you to be creative, you know, think beyond what we've done, and, you know, use your imagination, use your creativity, and that's not something that we're always doing in school. What about familiar characters? Did that make a difference today with the PBS app?
I think it definitely makes a difference, because in the beginning we kind of brainstormed who are some of the characters that are our favorites. And so they, like one boy, when it came time to program his story, he did a Wildcrats story, and they went, somebody was in danger, the baby rhino was in danger, and they had to go save him, and, you know, things happened, but it gave him an opportunity to retell and to create, with characters he was familiar with. And so that definitely helps in the whole idea schema.
Some of the things that we learned, I mean, Scratch Junior does not have the online community that full-blown Scratch has. And I just looked up these numbers for a blog post this week. Scratch, the software, environment has over 16 million projects now. I think it's either 6 or 7 years old. They're in over 40 languages, and it's an incredible community of shared projects. Strategy Junior doesn't have that, but we learned today that you can airdrop with newer iPads. If you have older, 30-pin like iPad 2s, they don't support airdrop. But if you have newer iPads, you can airdrop from iPad to iPad. And to do that, you just have to have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth both turned on, and you have to have airdrop set for everyone to be able to share. And then you can send those back and forth. You can also email, and we had to do that on some of our older iPads, to email projects to parents, and then you can open those. And
one thing that a limitation that I did find frustrating is, like, in my classroom, we have a digital portfolio. We're using the learning journal Seesaw, and we like to be able to save to our camera roll, but also be able to save in our learning journal. And that is hard to do. I mean,
I wonder... I think you could do this, and we're just thinking aloud with this.
But we have the iPad 2s.
Maybe we can do it with that other sharing app that we have. Because when you airdrop, you get to pick what app you pick it in, and you could actually, when you get newer iPads, we'll have to figure this out with email, because you're going to need either an email solution or to use that other sharing app that I can't remember the name of. But just like when we did this summer, we did an app smash where we went from Voice Record Pro, airdropped over into Opinion, or maybe it was vice versa. We took an Opinion and sent it to Voice Record Pro. When you're sending it wirelessly, you get the person who's receiving it gets to choose what app to open it in, and so you could open it in Seesaw that way. Mm-hmm. So for those of you with newer iPads, that would be a way to put a Seesaw, to put a Scratch Junior project into Seesaw. Anyway, yeah, it's a frustration and a limitation. But that being said, there's still a ton of, you know, benefits to using an app.
Oh, sure.
We also found there's a limit of 4 scenes, so you can just have 4 different background scenes. But one of the things we used a lot in the conversation story is called the messages. I was thinking it was similar or equal to the broadcast block in Scratch, which the broadcast block is something where it's kind of like you announce, scene one is beginning, and then whatever you want to have happen for scene one can happen. In the case of Scratch Junior and PBS Scratch Junior, you have something called messages, and there's 6 different colors, but those are specific to the level. So you can have each of the 6 colors, messages used in each scene. So that means, you know, 4 scenes times 6 colors. You could have 24 different interactions. So anyway, there's limitations, but there's a lot of great creativity that can happen inside that.
So one thing that I do want to begin developing is playing more in the draw environment. Like, I know I can go in and change characters and things, but I also, there's many things in the draw environment that I haven't focused on yet. I have found that some of my students, once they see the draw environment, that's all they want to do is draw. And right now I'm hoping that they will get a purpose for those drawings. Like when we drew for our movement, our interactive game, we created a character that was an explosion. So when the rocket ship ran into the moon, it exploded. And that was fun to draw in that environment. But that is an extension that I need to spend some more time with and develop, was just the, you know, producing characters or backgrounds. And I did notice that one student, though, had created a whole street scene in the draw environment that he was using as a background.
Oh, wow.
I forgot to look at that closely, but...
Okay, well, I think we're going to go transition to some of the recorded audio from the session, and I did 2 different short segments. I think one was when you were teaching the maybe initial animation, just the race game perhaps, and then I think I did a little bit of recording when you all were debriefing after they had done their motion animation, the rocket project. You did a little bit of the
interactive debrief. I like it to interactive.
Yeah. And we talked about how that matters, you know, because they are different things. And even one of the kids picked it up, they're like, well, is this going to be a game? You know, can I do that? And yeah, you can. So as you listen to this, I'll challenge you to listen to the vocabulary that Shelly uses, listen to the way she's responding to students, and see if there's anything that you can pick up in just the ways that she's inviting students to be sharing, to be creative, and to, you know, go beyond just the predefined parameters, you know, really celebrating when students are going beyond and doing something else. And I love that. I think it's, we had it today where we had some really excited sharing going on. And anyway, see if you can get that in the language as you hear this next bit of the podcast.
Everybody change your speed. So each character is going to be running at a different speed. So change your speed block. Yeah, so he's walking. What's Stacy doing? Running. And Squeaks is racing. Nicely done. Nicely done. Oh, you are awesome. Gosh, you guys are picking this up fast.
Or to do that in fewer blocks, what could you, okay?
I know, I was doing these to see how many I needed.
Oh, okay, that's another way to do it. And the cat is so slow, it just walks.
So I made the cat lose.
Oh, did you? Did you make Nature Cat fast?
No, I want Nature Cat to lose.
Oh, you want Nature Cat to lose?
Alright. Did everybody get that script?
Yes.
Everybody press the go back to start position, and let's run our program.
Tap the button between the pink home button and the grid. I'm going to turn off my grid because I don't really need that on.
All right, you can turn off the grid. So go back up there and tap on the grid to get rid of it.
Did it work? Did you get loose?
Uh-oh.
Oh, careful.
You okay?
I made him step down.
Oh, he really went slow. All right,
let's watch. Let's see what happens.
Anymore.
Here they go.
We're going to see this
on your
full
mark.
Screen.
Get set.
Oh, Squeaks, go. Nature Cat, you need to speed up a little bit. You're kind of going a little slow in this race. And that is how you can create your project.
All right, Mr.
So
Burr's
once you've done
you
that, try to do some fun extensions. See if you can make one of your characters announce how excited they are to have won.
Are you listening to your challenge? You're getting ready to have your own work time. Here's your challenge.
Squeakers. Maybe to encourage other characters during the race. See if you can also have a character fall into a hole or disappear or something else happen during the race. Have fun making your race game in Scratch Junior by PBS Kids.
All right.
Hi, this is Wes Fryer.
So you're now your work time. I'm going to give you 10 minutes again. If we need to increase that, we can. 10 minutes.
Right,
I want you
to
add either... Add encouragement so that they're encouraging each other. You can have a ready, set, go. You can have, Mr. Fryer thought it would be funny to have somebody break their leg and have to fall into a black hole or something like that.
Or disappear,
Or disappear.
You don't want to make them disappear.
All right, so keep your race, but program in some interesting details. Keep your race.
I'm gonna make one of them
program
the
in some
stuff,
interesting
so
details.
It can be like a spectator.
If you want to change characters, that's awesome. If you want to change backgrounds, that's awesome.
Hayden's gonna add a spectator who's going to say some words of maybe
but
encouragement.
But he's gonna be invisible.
Ooh, an invisible. Ooh, so they're like
an invisible spectator. All right, I'm setting my timer for 10 minutes. I want you to add detail to your race game. Add interesting detail to your race game. Starting off too fast. And so she had a solution that she tried and it happened to work. Anybody else discover something new? Yes, Steven.
Well, I did the Harvey Eagle versus the cheetah versus the rhino. And I put the rhino in shrink first. And I made the cheetah really fast. But then after a while, I made the rhino grow bigger 9 times. But I think the cheetah still won.
All right, excellent. So again, going on that size thing to make the difference, grow and shrink. We're gonna learn more about grow and shrink in our next project, Stephen. So I'm glad you've already discovered that. Let me get Bryson, and then we'll come back to Lucy. Bryson. Sorry, I'm bad. I have a friend named Grayson, so that's why I keep saying that. Go ahead.
I found a basketball and I was trying to make it fit Nature Cat's head so he could tap out in the water.
Well, there you go. If Nature Cat gets hit in the head with a basketball, he might then pass out in the water.
And then a shark will eat him.
Definitely an obstacle to overcome. Lucy?
I figured out that, I have the... my cheetahs tied up, and then one of them falls in a hole, and then they grow too big, but the baby still wins for some reason.
All right, there you go. Sometimes it can be a surprise ending, and we don't have any idea. All right, anybody else discover a new block that did something that we haven't, like, taught yet? So you can teach us something new that we haven't discovered yet. Samuel.
The repeat block. It makes stuff repeat. You can put blocks in within it, and it'll make it repeat.
Okay, and it, that was it. The repeat block, is that in the yellow one? No, not the yellow, but the orange ones?
I believe.
I think it's in the orange set of blocks. The repeat blocks, so that you can put this big repeat, so anything under it will continually repeat. We're also going to look at a loop. In our next project, we're going to look at a looping block that'll do something similar as well. So, yes, finding the repeat block, finding the looping block, if you want things to go over and over and over again. Hayden.
The next scene block, that takes you straight to the next one if you don't click on
it. Excellent. Because in a game, you kind of start off at level one. It's kind of easy, right? And once you meet that challenge, then you go to level two, which is a new challenge that you build. And then if you meet that challenge, you go to level three. Because I know that that's what's challenging about games, is like solving the challenge, solving the problem, and going up to the next level. And that's just game theory, right? And that keeps people wanting to come back and play your game. So having things like that, going to different levels, is a neat thing, feature. Yes, Samuel?
Are we
going to
make actual games that we can actually play?
You know what? What this is today is introducing you to basic skills. You guys are the game creators.
We might.
Right?
At the very bottom, we'll just tell you this. At the very bottom, I made a video for...
This is advanced.
Amazing.
This is probably something you're going to do at home, so you can stop and start.
But we'll see.
But this is the code involved in an advanced
game. You have to have
game.
8 sprites for this maze game. But we might be able to get there. It just kind of depends on how we do. Okay?
We're going to give you the skills to go back and create your own games. But this website is emailed to you, your parents, so you can go back and learn any of these projects on your own at home. So you're going to take the skills you learned today, take them home with you, and I am really hoping that you will begin coding your own games using the Scratch Junior. All right, does anybody need a break, or are y'all ready to push on through?
Break.
If you need, there's no food. We're going to stop for lunch early.
We do have food for lunch, but not
we have
not
food for lunch, but not snacks. But if you need to go to the bathroom, if you need to get a drink of water, you can go ahead and go do that.
I think we should take a break.
Yeah, so let's take about a 3-minute break. Create a new project. So how do we create a new project?
Tap
the blue plus button. So go home. Go home. Add a new project. Now this guy... This is not Mr. Fryer and I. This guy is from Australia. And you're going to hear it in his accent. He is a teacher in Australia. So he's going to be taking you through the motions of playing, of creating kind of a touch game. What was your name again, Samuel? Samuel already discovered that he wanted to make his game interactive. So let me show an example of what you are going to be creating. Shh. Is this where I'm doing now? Yeah, here it comes. All right, so this is going to be an example of the game that you're going to learn to create. So where should your eyes be? On the screen, because you might miss it. This is called a moving game. This is going to be interactive. So there's the project that you're going to build. I am going to go full screen. I'm going to press my green button. Well, let's go back. I can control the spaceship by touching it because I don't want it to collide into the Earth or the Moon or somebody rename theirs over here. A meteor, so it could be a meteor too. So, is that yours? All right, so I'm going to press the green button again, but this time I'm going to touch the rocket ship
to back him up so that he doesn't touch. Because as long as I do that, boom! As soon as he collides, it explodes. And you notice this character? For those of you who haven't discovered the art section of this, you can change your characters. And so, or you can draw your own character. So this is going to become a character in our next game. All right, are you ready? All right, so everybody clear your board. Start your project. Let's listen to this guy. He has a fun accent, but he's easy to read or easy to listen to. Let me get back to the computer now. There we go. You ready?
As I have a coughing fit, Mr. Park, can you get me some water, please?
Yep.
Thanks.
To make a simple project which involves two sprites that move across, and then one sprite that's constantly moving that's got to try and avoid them. And this is a really good project to show the children without any code, get them to decompose, break it up, tell you what the different things do. So here we go. Let's we're on Scratch Junior. We're just clicking on the plus button here to actually make a new project. So here we go. And we've got our little cat. We're going to get rid of the cat. So we just hold our finger over the cat. You see it goes wobbling.
All right, have you noticed that he is in the regular Scratch Junior? He's not in the PBS, but the same rules apply. So in the regular Scratch Junior, you have Scratch Cat. And so, but even though he is working in the regular Scratch Junior, we can still have the same characters in the PBS Scratch Junior.
Pretty much.
All right?
There's a rocket, there's a planet.
So we're going to use the same characters that he does, but our environment's just a little bit different. So if you're going, wait, this is weird, that's why. Everybody with us? Did you already delete Dot?
Yeah, we're going to be able to use it. Fantastic. Now we can get lots and lots of other things here just by clicking that little plus sign, and it brings us up lots of different sprites. Now, fortunately for us, there's a lovely little rocket in here. Of course, you could get the children to draw their own. He says there's a rocket right down the bottom there, so just going to...
All right, did you guys find your rocket?
Yeah.
Way at the bottom. It's way at the bottom. Got it?
Got it.
All right. So you're going to add a rocket as your first character.
Select that. Okay, and then I'm just going to click the tick to bring the rocket.
All right, he calls the check mark a tick. That's because he's Australian, right? So, but the check mark is a tick.
All right, so that's my first sprite in here. We don't need to do too much more to that. Apart from it's quite a good idea just to reposition that by dragging it down to the bottom. And can you see there's a little arrow with a cross, and that just tells it.
That's that one.
Okay, if you click that once, that just tells it.
That takes it back to the start position.
Yeah, that's its home position. Okay, so there it's home position for that rocket. And that's great. Now let's go and find a couple of things for it to miss. So I'm clicking the plus button again.
Go back to your ad.
And I am now going to go.
Go way down to the bottom again.
Down and see if I can find.
You're going to find things that are in space.
Fortunately, Scratch Junior has.
If you were in the ocean, you could find ocean animals.
And we can choose things. I don't want to find.
All right, so in Scratch Junior, the other one, they have a few more choices, but I think you have an Earth and a Moon in yours.
Can I use the Sun?
All right, I'm not going to look. You just don't spend any time. We're not going to wait. So just choose two things.
There we go. And I'm also just going to position my planet somewhere and also click that cross with the arrow pointing at its home position again as well. And I'm going to go and find another planet. Very simple, same sort of way.
So you need one rocket, two planets, or two objects.
Yeah, looking for another planet. Well, there's a couple there, actually. There's a moon I can choose, or there's Saturn. Well, I'm going to go for the moon. So the children can add whatever they want. And they, hopefully they won't choose to use the same things as this.
So when you have your own creative time, you can change those. You might draw your own planet. You might have a space alien.
And I'm just going to click that home button as well. Any other thing we really need to do here is just go and find a background.
Go up Oh, look.
Click the background button.
Now, this is where he is going to introduce. If you have not found the paint your own, he's going to show you how to paint your own background. So, he's going to use a plain black background.
The black background, I painted this earlier. If you're not quite sure, all you have to do is click an empty one.
So, get a blank sheet of paper. So, select the blank sheet of paper. It'll take you into the draw environment. And here's the paintbrush. So, click your blank piece of paper. And then go to paint.
See a little control and that will help you find the right thing.
All right. Did everybody get a black background?
Nope.
Mm-hmm. You can make it black. You can make it blue. It's just your space background, wherever you want your spaceship flying. Remember, if you're not creating right now, save your creating for your work time. Now we're just getting the basic idea of how to create it. He's going to teach you a neat technique, so pay attention.
Space background. Okay, that's cool. Now, let's have a look at some of the things that we want to do. Now, the only problem is all of these sprites are quite big at the moment. So we want to sort of, when the game starts, you want to just shrink them down a little bit. So let's start with a rocket. And we need a bit of trial and error here. We're going to go for a green flag. So they all start on the same green flag. If you go to the purple blocks, you can see that there's a shrinking block in here.
You guys know that one already.
Drag that over and snap that in there. And we can sort of experiment for about the sort of right shrinkage.
Now listen to this. He is getting ready to talk about some advanced math here. So listen, he's going to change that number. You remember when we talked about negative integers? Listen to what he says here.
Okay. What I quite like is actually when you've got one piece of code, you want pretty much the same thing. You can just drag the piece of code up and drop it onto the other sprites that you want it onto. There we go. That will now be in the earth. And drag it up and then onto the moon.
All right, so you're writing the same script for each one of your characters, just like we did. So drag it up to shrink for each one. So Earth, Rocket, and Moon all have the same script right now. And then we're going to change.
And that will now be in the moon. Let's just go and check that those are in there. Okay, that's brilliant. Now let's try that with the green flag and see if it
Watch
works.
Watch it. Yeah. And boom, they all go small. Cool as that. Did y'all get that?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody got them to shrink at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Look, they're shrinking by 8. Did you see they're shrinking by 8?
Oh, okay.
They're shrinking by 8.
I got it now.
Shrink by 8. And everybody, look, Earth has the same script, Moon. So all of them shrink the same amount. It's proportional. That way you have more room to play your game. When they're ginormous, they're all going to bump into each other. Right. We don't want ginormous characters in this game.
Okay, so we're back on the rocket again. And, of course, what we want is the rocket to move.
All right, so now we're coding for the rocket. So is everybody on the rocket? All right, sweet. Y'all are good.
Okay, that's one of the things that should be decomposed. So we can have another green flag block because we want this to do.
Oh, this is new. Look what he's doing. He's not building on that code. He's building a separate thing for Rocket to do. So he's got a second green block. All of these blocks don't have to connect. You can have separate scripts going for the same character. So now we've got everybody shrinking, but now he's going to program something different for the rocket. Yes, Lucy.
Should we put on a stop button for the last couple?
Yes, you can. I don't know why he didn't, but yes, that's a great thing to notice. If you want to put a stop button on your first script, you definitely can. Way to watch for detail. So now we're building a second script for Rocket. A second script for Rocket. This is going to be an important skill when you get to the after lunch activity because you're going to program multiple scripts for multiple characters.
And we're going to pick those movie blocks and we want the rocket to
I know,
just
I'm ready
over
to.
And over again. Now, you could put it inside a loop, which would be fine, but there is actually a sort of a loop which will loop the whole sequence of instructions.
Watch this, this is a new block.
Red blocks, you can see that sort of continuous chasing its tail type loop there. Okay, drag that on there.
All right, so this is that repeat block. You could have done it in the, you know, that orange one, but this is a repeat block as an ending block. That means what's going to happen to the rocket? It's going to keep going and going and going, just like Samuel discovered earlier.
You can still control it. You can keep going.
Yes. Well, let's watch. Let's press the green flag and watch. Here it goes. Watch. Okay. Watch the rocket.
Yeah, there we go. We've got the rocket.
Screen.
Okay, constantly moving up.
Now see it flashing?
The way that Scratch Junior just does this, you can actually see it flashing, the code block flashing as it works, which I think
that's
is really
awesome.
Useful. So
mm-hmm.
I'm going to click the little red button here just to stop the program.
Stop.
There we go. It's
come back. Oh, I love his accent too.
Which is great. Now we want very similar blocks for the Earth and the full moon, but they're not exactly the same because we want the planets to go right and go left. So I'm going to click on the Earth here.
Click on the Earth.
And we want very similar code. Of course, I could have dragged it, but it is a little bit different. So I'm going to have
so
the Earth
second script for Earth
constantly to the left.
And oh, look! So the Earth's going the opposite direction. And repeating.
Loops in there as well.
So, you've got the rocket going up and down. You've got the Earth going side to side, going left. And then it's looping over and over. So everybody have that code built?
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to invent other code yet. You can be creative later. Otherwise, you're going to get lost. Is everybody ready?
No.
Are we ready?
Yeah.
Now we need to write the code for them to collide.
What?
Oh, code the moon now. So you've coded the rocket, you've coded the Earth, now code the moon. So you're going to write a second script for the moon.
Pretty much the same thing. Notice you can have
this is the moon.
Blocks of code. Okay, you can decide.
Moon's going the other direction.
Different blocks of code running off the same side.
And then it's still going loopity-loop.
So let's have a little check of this and see if we've got it.
Here goes full screen.
There, goes small. And there I've got my planets. And you can see
so
this.
So Earth is going one way. Moon is going.
So it's quite important.
But look. They're going to crash and
of course, at this point,
nothing happens. Why? All right. Nothing happens when they crash because he hasn't written the code for it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to figure out what happens when the spaceship collides with the Earth or the moon. So, and how does that happen? And then we're going to figure out how we can avoid it. This is what makes your game interactive. Rather than just watching it, it's actually participating in it. Are you with me?
Yes, Shelly.
All right, yes.
When I pressed on the green flag, they just got
all right, Wes is going to... All right, here we go. Yes, Lucy.
That mine always collides into my Earth instead of my moon.
Yeah,
isn't that interesting? I wonder if you can adjust the start position of your rocket.
Okay, you got to put the shrink in there.
You can adjust the start position of the rocket. Yes.
Small, right?
When my rocket crashed, it crashed into Earth and the moon.
Well, there you go, because you've got your Earth and moon like on the same plane, right? All right, so it's going to depend on what your start positions are, isn't it?
Yeah.
So everybody's game is going to be a little bit different because your start positions are all a little bit different.
How do you start them at the same time?
Put the flag on them and just...
All right, are we ready to go to the next step?
Yes.
All right, so this is... This is what's going to happen when, so if the rocket crashes, then what happens?
So if the rocket crashes, then what happens? Let's watch.
It has to have some sort of control over the program. So we click back into rocket, and then we'll click the little red flag just to stop.
All right, so go back to rocket. What we're going to do now is we're going to be able to touch rocket to make him do something. So this is what's going to make the game interactive.
This for a second. And we've got these other blocks now. Can you see we've got the option to the little white hand with a person?
You see this
that
one?
That means that if somebody touches them.
So find this block. So if somebody touches the object, so now you're adding, if they touch this, this is what makes it interactive. You discovered this earlier, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so here we go. So find this block in the trigger blocks. It's in your trigger blocks.
Yellow.
Or the yellow blocks.
The sprite that's going to do something. That can be all sorts of things.
But so new script.
So
again, we're starting a new script for Rocket. So we have three different scripts built for him. Because now we want Rocket to do something else.
I'm sort of stopping of the motion. Now, the best way to stop some motion is actually to go in reverse of the motion we've already got. So we've got it going up all the time. So we're just going to pull it down.
Yes.
Now, if you were on Scratch, main Scratch, you'd probably put minus one and then go backwards. But if you click in here, you see it doesn't touch. Well, let's actually try it.
It does. You can go negative one.
Work, but let's just try and see if we can get minus one in there. Okay. Oh, that's quite cool. There we go. Let's have a little go. So here we go.
Let's have a little go.
Spaceship. If I want to.
He's going up.
Press on him.
And it stops it and backs it. Stop and back.
Now, if your children aren't really into minus numbers, which, let's be honest, most of them aren't going to be in key stage one.
But you guys are geniuses, right?
So we have to use a minus number?
No, you don't have to.
Okay. Yeah, it will go down. The question
was, all right, Lucy, ask your question again.
I thought we were going down instead of up.
Well, your rocket is going up. So in order to stop it, we need to
go down.
Two blocks. This one is keeping it going what?
Up.
And it's looping and looping.
Keep on that, please.
Will cause it to go
but
down.
When you touch it, it will have it go backwards one.
Oh!
See?
I want to try this.
All right.
Where's your touching one?
Now.
See, that's because you're going up. There you go. That's the one you want. Now touch it. Touch this.
Oh, you can just touch this.
Yeah.
And have to touch the rocket.
Yes. So if you touch it, so again, this is advanced technique. This is not for beginners. You guys have already had two courses in this. So this is advanced technique here to make your game interactive.
I want to see the ball.
All right.
Don't touch my rocket.
Are you good? Everybody with us?
Yes.
Have you programmed it to go backwards one or minus one even? It will keep moving if you don't touch it. If you touch it, it backs it up one, right? Do you see? All right. Wes.
And now I can actually stop that just by clicking on it lots and lots of times. Oh, don't crash into the
plane.
Stop whatever you do.
I love how he gets excited.
Okay. And there we go. And that's just working away quite nicely. Remember, if you want to throw away a block, you just drag it onto the other blocks and let go. And we'll turn it off.
Now, what do we want to do now to make this game more exciting?
Blow up.
We need some pyrotechnics, right?
Explosion.
We need some explosions. Everybody loves a game where everything explodes.
No, it didn't explode. It crashed into the moon.
Hey, he's talking, so let's listen.
Moving. That'd be quite nice if we make it so that if the rocket does touch one of the planets, it does something. So let's do that. So we've got these lovely little icons here. Notice I'm doing this in the rocket.
All right. So we are writing a fourth script for Rocket. So now we're writing a new script. And look at the
Can I do the
block.
End?
Look at the block that he chose.
It's this one. So what do you see those two characters doing? Colliding. They run into each other. So we're going to write a script for when the rocket runs into something, something's going to happen. So the trigger is colliding, right? So this, the trigger is the colliding. So when these characters collide, what's going to happen? He's going to build it.
That has the two people facing each other. Two sprites. I mean, did they touch? It's going to do something. I'm going to make it do something. In fact, what I'm going to make it do is I'm going to make it go to another screen.
All right. Some of you have played with this already. So what we're going to do is go to a new screen. So watch how he does this. We're going to be working over here on the right-hand side.
Okay, and that way it'll really hit the game. So I'm going to click the plus on the right, top right, just underneath one. And he says, produce me another screen, new sprites, everything.
So get rid of Jot. Get rid of
him. I'm going to take the cat out.
I've got to create my explosion.
Backgrounds.
All right. So now he's going to go back to the backgrounds. We did this earlier. So he's going to create his own character. So you're going to find your blank page. We're going to create a character, and you're going to press on the paintbrush. Exactly. Good job.
Picture. Top in the middle.
You're already there.
Space scene.
Now, he chose his black background. You can choose your black background, and you can choose the white background.
Okay, well, now that you have listened to those archived recordings, just a few closing thoughts, and we'll wrap up. One of the ideas that I had was how important it is to talk about appropriate language and digital citizenship. You know, we give kids freedom when we say you can make a character say whatever you want. And I noticed today a couple of the boys were doing some, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. And that wasn't horrible, right? I mean, they weren't using profanity and it wasn't, you know, horrible, but it also was a little bit ugly. And I said, now, Ms. Fryard, should we be using appropriate language in this? And that led to, you know, us talking about, well, this isn't school, but, you know, our parents are going to see what we're doing. And anyway, I think it was positive. And I didn't see them use that kind of language. And it was like a check. You know, it was a little bit of a check on them to say, wait a minute. I mean, we are having freedom here. But let's remember other people are going to see this. And we're going to, you know, we'll be accountable for this. We're going to show this to our parents. You have any thoughts along that line about freedom and, you know, kids texting and being appropriate? How do you handle that in your class?
I think digital citizenship is something we teach at all times. Every time we're working on a computer or in a digital environment. And so I do think it's very important that they know there are certain ways that we talk and yell at a football game, or there's certain ways that we talk and behave at a orchestra concert and or a play. And there's certain things that are appropriate, not appropriate in even a gaming environment. And I know that can be difficult when we have M-rated mature games. But I do think digital citizenship is not taught in just a single lesson, but is talked about and practiced no matter when or no matter what we're doing in digital creation.
I want to share a thought that kind of goes to lesson design with coding, and it could be with digital storytelling and other things, but simple beginnings can lead to complex creativity. Simple beginnings can lead to complex creativity. You know, I was joyfully thrilled to see the kids quickly take that race game, which seriously is just like so basic. It's just three characters, a background, and the script is green flag, move right 15 blocks, stop. Okay?
And
then the speed. Yeah, then you put a speed block and you introduce and there's a slow, medium, and fast. And that's it, you know? But beyond that, you know, what if they break their leg? What if they fall in a hole? What if somebody, you know, talks to somebody?
How could they cheer on each other?
Yeah. You know? And then they discover the invisibility block, and, oh, what if there's a spectator? And what if, you know, I don't know. I love that because it was a prompt that everybody could respond to and succeed in, right? Have success building it and seeing it done, but then go beyond the simple. And that's sort of like the low bar, high ceiling. Like, where can you go with that? Well, there's all kinds of places you can go with it. And I love that. Any other
concluding thoughts that you have about anything you would have done differently or that you'd recommend to others who would be taking on a similar sort of activity?
Well, you know, it definitely does help. We had Wes and myself and then Lisa and McKaylin. So we did have four adults to, 15 students. And it really does help to have plenty of helpers. Like, when I do this in my classroom, it's usually me and just the students. And I have about 15 or 16 students. So it definitely does help having extra hands on board. Or, like I always, as part of our procedures, we are all responsible for each other's learning, and we all have a hand in our learning. And so that it is important that if you need help, you need to ask for help, but you can ask your neighbor or your partner. And so we all are teachers when we're developing things like this. And I think it's important to empower students to be teachers as well as learners. And I do think it's important that we all have a hand in each other's learning.
Awesome. So we hope you have found this to be beneficial. And there are certain things that we know are worth investing in, right? It is worth breaking bread with family and friends and having conversation. It is worth introducing students to exciting books that you love, you know, that might hook them on the same books or just on reading in general. We know it's good to get kids interested in coding and in making games and in, you know, not just being the consumers of media, but being the creators of media. So anyway, if this has been helpful to you, please reach out to us. Shelly, where can people find you online?
ShellyFryer.com. is my blog, and my classroom webpage is classroom.shellyfryer.com.
All right. And what about Twitter?
Also on Twitter, I'm at S. Fryer. So please reach out and let me know what you're thinking, and let me know if I can help, or if you have resources that you've been using and you feel are successful, I would love to see those and share with each other.
Hey, and here's a hidden Easter egg. If you are a student in the Cindy Danner-Kuhn's technology class, DED 318 at Kansas State, if you are the first person to tweet us or one of us that you have listened to this podcast, we will send you a coding book in the mail. So, yeah, there you go. That's a specific shout-out to them, but we've been engaged with some of their students listening to some of our podcasts and reading some of our stuff. And you can find my blog on speedofcreativity.org. I am W. Fryer on Twitter, and would also encourage you to check out the almost weekly educational technology news show, the EdTech Situation Room, that I co-produce with Jason Neifer out of Missoula, Montana. And you can find that at EdTechSR on Twitter or EdTechSR.com. And we go live on most Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Central Time. 8 p.m., we can do the math, I guess. 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, 8 Mountain, or 7 Pacific. So, remember, Scratch has a low bar and a high ceiling, and we are never too old to learn something new. And hopefully you'll be inspired to learn some new things with coding and to take that to students. Thank you a lot.
Thanks for listening.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.